Hello and welcome to Inbound Raleigh, a podcast about all things transportation and transit in Raleigh, North Carolina. I'm Jennifer.
And I'm James. Believe it or not, Jennifer and I started this show about 10 months ago. Time sure flies, right?
Definitely. I'm just glad we made it this far. I figured it would be really embarrassing if we didn't actually make it to a full year, but so far, looking good. We just might do it.
Yeah, I'm patting myself on the back right now for a job well done. Good for us. But the point of all that is that today we've got our old friend Eric Lamb back on the show. Eric is the City of Raleigh's Transportation Planning Manager, and he was our first guest way back in September of last year. Welcome back, Eric.
Thank you so much for having me back. I appreciate it.
Well, today we've dragged you back in the studio, Eric, to talk about the upcoming transportation bond. Now, I know, listeners, what you're thinking. Didn't we just talk about all these transportation transit bonds back when we first got going? No, that was the transit bond. And this year, Raleigh's asking voters to consider a transportation bond, and Eric is going to fill us in on those details.
And if I can offer a little further correction, it wasn't a transit bond. It was a transit sales tax.
Sales tax,
yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, and everybody colloquially called it a transit bond because everybody was coming in to do a vote. But it was a transit referendum for a half-cent sales tax.
Well, there you go. Mm.
And this is a more traditional transportation bond like we've done in the past. Our last transportation bond was in 2013 for $75 million. This is a proposal that would be a bond referendum that would be on the fall elections ballots this year. And our city council struggled a lot in terms of looking at how big of a bond to develop. They got a lot of feedback from the public about the need for improving infrastructure in the city, a lot of feedback about the condition of streets, congestion issues, making the city more bicycle and pedestrian friendly, looking at means of alternative transportation, dealing with the whole spectrum. And so ultimately the package that the council adopted is over $206 million. So easily eclipsing the city's previous biggest bond, which was our parks bond in 2014, was a $91 million package. Mm-hmm. So we've doubled down. So take that, parks.
Is there some kind of interdepartmental contest about
no,
that?
No, we love parks. In fact, it was always a source of pride for me that we were spending more on parks than we were on streets. But we sort of tipped that equation in a different direction. That being said, we certainly have a lot of needs around the city. And this type of package certainly does do a lot to go after some of the projects that we already have in the pipeline. There's a few of these that are close to being shovel ready. So there'd be some more immediate delivery on a couple of these projects. And then it really lays out some fairly ambitious large scale projects that otherwise would not be achievable on a pay as you go basis. And so that's one of the interesting things about this package that we're looking at.
Yeah, and you mentioned some of them are shovel-ready. I think I was looking over the most recent version of the bond, and I saw, I think it was Yonkers Road. Looks like it would receive construction funding almost right away if the bond is passed. Was I looking at that right? Or
well, you were.
Oh,
but the final version that was adopted by the city council cut Yonkers Road out of the package.
Oh, it did. Okay.
Yeah. Now, let me be clear, because this is a misconception a lot of people have, is that when we're doing a bond referendum, what people are really voting on is the debt. So we will be issuing over $200 million of debt that would make an obligation to the city to pay back. The actual projects don't get approved by the voter referendum. We lay out a fiscal plan of how we would use those monies if the bond is approved. But the approval of the bond referendum does not automatically mean that we will do these exact projects. In fact, there's been a couple cases over the past couple of decades where we've had to make some adjustments where conditions have changed. We try and stick very closely to what we put out with the public because we don't want to ever be accused of doing a bait and switch. We are operating in good faith, and we want to secure the good faith of voters that what we say we're going to deliver, that we actually do deliver. So Yonkers was one that didn't make the cut in the end, and that's one that, you know, it was primarily a two-lane improvement. The streets in rough condition. We're probably going to get some other ways to try and fund that. The other thing people forget is that our transportation bond is not our complete transportation capital program. So there's actually our traditional capital program that we do a lot more of our projects on. But so this is a complete list of bond-funded projects, but does not represent our entire capital program. So we'll look at trying to find ways to get Yonkers done, because Yonkers is a real need. The road's in really rough shape. Those businesses that are out there don't have any sidewalks. They don't have very good access to transit. So we want to look at how do we enhance those. But The package that we've got certainly does have some interesting projects. The biggest one is one that's been a point of recent public debate with the City Council, and that is the Six Forks Road Corridor plan implementation. And that would look at making some significant improvements to Six Forks from North Hills up to Lynn Road. And a lot of people that know that area of North Raleigh, it's a fairly congested street. Mm-hmm. It's got some issues. It's really not it's a marginally walkable street, definitely not a bikeable street. And so the plan that's envisioned in the corridor plan really does a lot to address that. And this would fund the implementation of that plan.
Right. Wasn't there a bunch of debate over transit or transportation lane versus BRT lane? And
well, right now, there's not a plan to extend any BRT facilities in the North Hills area yet. There's been some active conversations about that in the context of the whole Wake Transit plan. Mm-hmm. And then as part of Raleigh's comprehensive plan update, looking at our next 10 years, our next 20 years of what transit's going to look like. The Wake Transit plan, as it was approved, represents a 10-year fiscally responsible plan for what we can implement, but the Raleigh Comprehensive Plan is more of a 30-year plan, so there's going to be ongoing conversations about Raleigh's long-term transit vision and how we connect that to North Hills. Obviously, that's really important because North Hills is now the second densest area of the city outside of downtown, so the need to have it served with some robust transit infrastructure is a really good idea. The big debate was there were some folks that didn't feel like the road needed to be widened to make any improvements. Congestion was a big source of concern that we heard from a lot of people, and part of that has to do with the bottleneck with some lane drops in that area. Plus, there's been some growth around North Hills, and so ultimately, we're looking at the current plan recommends making that into a six-lane facility, and then the ability to look at separated bicycle and pedestrian facilities, and it would be the first major separated facility that we would do on a major railway project. And if you want to see what that would look like, if you've been out to the Museum of Art lately on Blue Ridge Road, they actually came to us during the process of their site plan development, said we want to do something interesting. And we were in the process of developing the Six Forks plan, and they saw it, and they said, we really want to try this out as a test project. And so what you have is you have an asphalt bicycle lane that's located a few feet behind the curb. And so the bicycle lane is actually out of the car traffic, not separated by striping. It's actually separated by a hard curb, and then a separate sidewalk zone beyond that. And that's exactly the type of design that we're talking about for all of Six Forks.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it looks like you've got a list of projects. How many are we looking at right now? Obviously, you said this could change.
So it's about 15 plus or minus street improvement projects. And then there's a number of programmatic elements that we would also have funded out of this. So there were some projects that we got started on in our last transportation bond. And we wanted to go ahead and have some forward momentum with those projects and start to move forward with the design on some of those projects, as well as some of the right-of-way acquisition. And then the money that would be allocated from this bond would cover the balance of what's left over for those projects. So we talked about Old Wake Forest Road, and that's between Atlantic Avenue and Capitol Boulevard. That project, we actually, as part of this bond measure, we're going to expand the scope of that, because we got some feedback that one of the missing pieces up there was actually this connective street called Dixie Forest that runs between Atlantic and Spring Forest and runs right beside Millbrook High School. Okay. And you've got a new Sheetz, you've got a new Waffle House, and a lot of kids that walk back and forth. So this project is going to, the bond would help us expand the scope of that project to include adding curb and gutter and sidewalks and making it more walkable and accessible. Tryon Road, the last segment of Tryon Road to be improved. You know, last time I was here, we were still reconstructing the bridge. NCDOT was replacing the bridge over the railroad and realigning the road. That is now all done. So all that's left is from the railroad bridge back to Lake Wheeler Road, widening that out to four lanes to match the rest of the corridor. That's one of the last sections of Tryon left to be improved. We're looking at improvements on Pool Road that are east of Maybrook and head out towards Barwell Road. There is a project to improve Blue Ridge Road, but this is for the portion that basically runs from Rex Hospital and Durley Road down to Crabtree Valley Mall. And if you know that area, it's three lanes, it's two lanes, it's kind of windy, and so there'd be a lot of efforts to make that more consistent.
It's a good connector road as is, but it'd be great to see it improve.
Yeah, and especially to add in the bike and ped elements in there, because there's so much residential that's so close to the retail and the other amenities in that area that's just otherwise inaccessible that you have to go by car.
Yeah.
And so a lot of that would knit that together very nicely.
So is there a list of these all online where people can go check it out?
So we are working on putting together a project website now.
Okay, great.
That would have all these up there and have descriptions about them. And then in the coming months, there will be different opportunities. The city council is working on appointing a committee that would be responsible for promoting the bond. And then staff's available as a resource to provide an explanation of what the bond improvements would entail.
Okay. And you were explaining a little bit earlier about some of the technicalities. So we're voting on whether the city will take on this debt.
Correct.
But that doesn't necessarily mean there's a tax associated with it.
Now, at this point, with what's been looked at, the city had some amount of debt capacity that it could take on without a sales tax. I'm sorry, property tax increase, excuse mm-hmm. me. But ultimately, with the package that we're looking at, between the cost of the debt and the cost of the additional maintenance that some of these things would require, right now we're anticipating it would be a 1.29 cent property tax increase. And so what that would equate to is for every $100,000 of valuation of your property, it would be $12.90 of additional tax. So if you owned a $300,000 house, it would be about $37, $38 more per year on your taxes. So...
not too bad.
That's the trade-off.
Yeah. And real quick, I'm not sure if the projects you mentioned are considered, any of them are road diets or not. And but one I think I'd seen, and maybe it's not on there anymore, but because I was looking at that old bond, but it was on Person and Wake Forest are mm-hmm. both set to be slimmed down. And looks like there's some kind of two-way conversion project tied mm-hmm. in with that as well. So
that's right.
Is that part of this or...
So
you want it to be part of it?
The 2013 bond had a project allocation that was to allow us to go through and restripe the street
yeah.
and to do a reconfiguration of the street, sometimes called a road diet, where you're reducing the number of travel lanes down. And we had developed a corridor plan, run analysis numbers, found that it wasn't really going to be a big problem for us to do that. And so the goal on Blunt and Person was to make the lanes more consistent, especially as you go through like the Moore Square area. You go from two lanes to three lanes to two lanes, unless there's a bus or a delivery vehicle parked there. And then what we found is that, you know, a lot of the traffic on Blunt Street just rides down the center lane. So you get like 80% of the traffic using the center lane and then 10% using the outside lanes because they're so skinny. And so this is a case, as my old boss used to say, I'd rather have two good lanes than three bad ones. And so what it's going to do is it's going to make the lanes consistent through there. That additional pavement that's left over is going to give us the ability to add a bike lane in throughout the entirety of it. Now, the road diet component in earnest is going to happen on the section of Wake Forest Road. So north of the Person Street Business District, north of Delway, and then connecting up to where just north of the Circus restaurant is located.
Yeah.
I reference all things by food. I apologize.
No, that's a great landmark.
But yeah, everybody knows
it's really the only landmark there. There's like a gas station.
Yeah.
So we're going from four lanes down to three. And that's actually a pattern for us. We've done that on about a half dozen streets now. In general, we find that the safety aspects of using a three-lane section with a center turn lane and one lane each direction is safer than a four-lane undivided street with two lanes each direction. You may remember we made those changes a few years ago on parts of Peace Street. Went from four lanes to three, and there's a trade-off involved. It can, in a high-volume situation, lead to a slightly more congestion, but at the end of the day, the crash rates are significantly lower.
Huh.
And the severity of crashes, the number of crashes that you have, and it makes it a lot easier as a pedestrian to cross the street. And so, as a general rule, we're not doing four-lane undivided roads anymore. And then the beauty is people think, well, you're taking a lane away. You're clearly, you know, impacting traffic. But the fact is that from a delay and level of service standpoint, it actually doesn't. It works about the same. So you get roughly the same amount of operational benefit plus the safety benefit. And it's a no-brainer for us. But, you know, I can count the number of times that I've seen, you know, kids and their families trying to get across the street so the kids can walk to school. And, you know, that's disturbing on that kind of facility to see that. And so I think that, you know, we're really interested in seeing the positive impacts of taking that road down to three lanes. So that was all approved with the 2013 bond.
Okay.
In the conversation with the 2017 bond, the interest is to be able to introduce the next phase of the Blunt Person Corridor Plan, which is to actually convert Blount and Person Street to two-way operation. And that's been a big point of conversation with some of our downtown plans.
Oh, I more, can't picture it.
More interest. Well, you know, I mean, back in the 70s, we did such a good job of making these streets into one way. They're going to be hard to undo. And it's
Oh, is that when they were switched? They used to be two-way.
Yeah.
And then one-way in the 70s. Okay. Yeah. And I was just telling James, I actually like one-way streets. I know I'm probably in the minority on that.
They have their purpose. I think, you know, as with all things, you got to find the right context. And what are you asking the street to do? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, Salisbury and Wilmington and downtown Raleigh, especially in the context of our transit planning and having increased transit operations in downtown. Those streets are likely going to stay one way because they're going to be our workhorses for moving a lot of those buses in and out of downtown. So, but Blount and Person are serving different functions. And so I think that the idea that, especially as it ties into Wake Forest Road and sort of humanizing the streets a little more, I think it's going to be really important. But the two-way conversion covers both streets from Delway down to Hoke, all the way down where it becomes Hammond Road. And so those transitions on the ends where it's, you know, really you make those big curves, and there's a lot of capital work that has to be done. Now, as part of this package, it includes two roundabouts. One would be at the intersection of Person and Delway, so just north of the Person Street Business District.
Where it sort of becomes Wake Forest.
That's right.
Yeah.
So that'll clean that up a little bit. And then by the circus, where you've got the cluster there where Wake Forest Road, Atlantic, Brookside, Automotive Way all come in together. Yeah. So again, we've affectionately started calling that the circus roundabout.
Again,
everybody knows what we're talking about. And then on the south end, there was a concept for a roundabout that was floated down south of Hoke Street. But we actually think that's probably overkill for that location. We've got a plan to do that with some more conventional street intersections.
Okay. I noticed the plan, you're talking about the two-way conversion project, and there was a mention of 30 revised traffic signals. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the big capital pieces of turning a street from one-way into two-way operation, is that you have to go back and add and upgrade all the traffic signals. Because right now, on a one-way street, you only have traffic signals that are facing one direction.
Sure.
So now you got to add in the reciprocal set in the other direction, and you basically have to rebuild the traffic signal.
Oh, wow.
So, and because it's a two-mile-long corridor, you're rebuilding 30 traffic signals in the heart of downtown.
Wow.
So that's a big part of the cost driver there. For that project,
it's just the traffic signals.
That alone.
Wow. So how long does it take to reprogram? Just that if you're not adding different streets or anything, is that something that you guys can do from a computer behind a desk? Just reprogram how a traffic light functions, or
yeah, okay, absolutely. So
you talked about rebuilding them. I wasn't sure if you had to get in there and change circuit boards or.
So we just went and upgraded our signal system a few years ago, and this is actually something that got some funding from a previous bond. We'd received some federal funds to do a complete rebuild of our entire city traffic signal system, which we have over 600 signals right now in our system. And those are signals on city streets and DOT streets that are throughout the city. And we upgraded that system to go to a fiber optic-based system. And what that allowed us to do is to have better communication between our central computers that control the individual signals and coordinate all the signals. We had done what were known as closed loops, where you could control a few signals together as long as they're wired up. Mm-hmm. Now the entire system is one big closed loop type system, and so all the signals are coordinated with each other. Downtown specifically runs on a pre-time system, so there are no sensors in the streets. And that's pretty unique to the rest of the city. The rest of the city runs with, they've got sensors that are in the streets or cameras that monitor traffic flows. But in downtown specifically, it's known as a pre-timed system. And that's more traditional in a grid that you have in an urban grid, like what we have in downtown. So to introduce new phasing, now if you start to introduce new phases where you have to have like an arrow, that requires hardware. But to change the phasing, the timing is a software issue.
Yeah.
So cool. I'm sure you don't want to get into the political part of this, but do you think voters are going to have any trouble understanding, you know, the need and, hey, I just voted on some other stuff last year and more taxes at all?
Yeah, so I mean, that's one of the questions that, like, my friends have asked. Like, hey, didn't we just vote on this?
Yeah.
I said, no, that was transit. You voted on a countywide transit referendum. This is a City of Raleigh transportation bond referendum.
Is that going to be confusing for people, though?
That's a good question. So I know that the chamber is going to be assisting the city with doing some of the marketing associated with a bond campaign, and to make sure it's completely clear, city staff does not advocate for bonds whatsoever. But that's been one of the primary questions is would there be confusion with voters or would there be fatigue with voters having already considered these types of referendums? And there's been some increase in of cost. I have to say as a user, as a resident of Wake County, I really haven't seen much from an impact standpoint on my wallet relative to sales tax changes. In fact, I didn't even know they went into effect on March 1st. Did you?
April 1st, I think.
April 1st.
I didn't really notice, but I know a couple of people tweeted, oh, I noticed my extra 5 cents or whatever it was.
You had 5 cents on a cup of coffee for better transit.
Yeah.
Okay. Makes sense. So, no, I think that's one of the questions that they're going to have to answer is, you know, in terms of they'll do polling and such to see, you know, what the public feedback is. So is it too big? Or I mean, this is much, much more sizable referendum than we've done in the past. Mm-hmm. So is it too big for voters? Those are the kind of questions that our elected officials are going to have to answer.
Hmm. Okay. And we had talked to Steve from the NCDOT a few weeks ago, and he told us that if the Fortify project had been delayed, that the roads literally would have started coming apart. He said they couldn't have delayed it any more than they did because the roads were in such bad shape. So you can't advocate for this bond, but what would be the worst case scenario Raleigh faces if we don't get this, city doesn't get this kind of funding?
Mayhem. I mean, cats lying down with dog. No. You know, I mean, the thing about using a bond, I mean, if we were to try and deal with this kind of backlog, I mean, if you look at the types of streets, part of what I've talked about before is the fact that, you know, it's really difficult for us to keep up with growth.
Yeah.
And a lot of growth these days, we're talking about density, but there's still areas of the city that have grown and grown out, and the need to be able to connect and expand, you know, the city services to those types of areas is still pretty important. So we're still an urbanizing community. And, you know, so if we were to look at what it would take to utilize this kind of money relative to a pay-as-you-go approach, and how much will we have to raise taxes, you know, we're looking at this $206 million package as something that we would pay out over a 4 to 6 year period. Relative to, again, that money would let's go with a 4 year argument. So let's say that it's we'd have $50 million a year roughly to work with. If we were going to try and generate that on a pay as you go basis, you'd have to raise property taxes by 10 cents. You know, because right now a penny of property tax increase will generate about $5.5 million of revenue. So just running rough numbers, you'd be talking about a 10 cent property tax increase to be able to cover that kind of money. And that's a pretty hefty increase. And when you look at where Raleigh is relative to, you know, other cities right now, our tax rate is 0.425, I think. And with this proposal, we get a 0.438. That's still lower, substantially lower than Charlotte. And lower than most other major cities in North Carolina. So.
Well, as long as we're lower than Charlotte, because, you know, we've got to compare ourselves to them.
Charlotte's got a lot, right?
Yeah. A lot of taxes.
That's what I hear. but again, I mean, it's just a matter of us being a growing city. And, you know, how do we continue to keep up with our infrastructure? I mean, we reviewed over $1 billion worth of potential projects with the city council. And it's that continued investment that you make in terms of being a growing city and, you know, one that's evolving into a more multimodal metropolis. So,
Well, thanks again, Eric, for joining us. We're going to link to the information you spoke about. Well, I guess we can't quite yet because the website isn't up.
We'll link to it
in the show notes, which you can find at inboundraleigh.com.
Yeah, also, you can help out our show by leaving us a review on either Google Play or iTunes. If you know someone else who likes to geek out about transportation in Raleigh, please tell them to subscribe.
And we also want to hear what you think of our show and your ideas for topics. Please email us at inboundraleigh@gmail.com, or you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle on all those platforms is inboundraleigh. Thanks again, and catch you next time.